9:06 on a Wednesday morning. Good morning to you. The sun is shining. It's the middle of March break week. A lot of you are off. The traffic is light. Beautiful drive in. And I plan to come in here in such a good mood. I was listening to all of the advice from our good sleep doctor yesterday. We were talking about adjusting after the time change. I'm going to put the plan in place. I'm going to start the good habits, the regular bedtime, make it all happen. I'll get up at 5 every day, whether it's a gym day or not. I'll keep that same morning wake-up time, do the routine. I bailed on the Senators game last night partway through, which wasn't that hard to do. Going to have a bath, going to read, do the whole thing. Then I end up getting a phone call. I'm talking with someone. My son's on March break. He comes home late. The whole thing falls apart. So at 1:30 in the morning, I text my gym buddy and I said, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to get to the gym. I got to push the alarm back a little bit. I need a little bit of sleep. I text her, but I don't switch the alarm. So it still goes off at 5 o'clock after a couple of hours sleep. I don't go back to bed. It's shot. I'm giving up. I'm just one of those people that just isn't going to get a lot of sleep. There's a wind chill this morning too. It's sunny. It looks beautiful, but glass is half empty today. I hope you're having a better morning out there as we get into our big five.
First of all, I've been dealing with these patio issues for 20 years, and I just found out last week that it was a done deal at council. Like, that's kind of what amazed me, you know, that there was kind of really no public consultation with some of the biggest stakeholders here. And that, you know, kind of really threw me back for a loop. And, you know, they say they're reducing them by 50%. Well, you know, to the average person, yeah, that sounds great. Well, in a way, it might be a great deal. But first of all, we have some of the highest patio fees in the country. And there's more at issue here than, you know, just setting up for the patio. I mean, we have no public servants working downtown. You know, the downtown is empty. We have demonstrations that are hindering the downtown core. We have a transit system that's broken that's not bringing anyone downtown. You know, and you couple this with the alcohol tax that they're bringing in April 1st. I mean, it's devastating for the downtown. And this, what I would have liked to have, you know, gotten the point across that it's not just, you know, the patio issue. There's other issues here that's, you know, coming into play. I mean, Ottawa Gatineau rates last in bringing people back to the downtown core. So, you know, you put all these things together and, yeah, it's way too soon to bring this back.
That is Joe Catronio, Pub Italia's owner on Preston. And that was a long but I think excellent explanation from him about why he is upset that the city is bringing back patio fees this summer. Half price, if you will. They had cut the fees during the pandemic. They're bringing them back at 50%. And Joe says, despite the fact that he has been very involved in this industry for decades, there was really no consultation with stakeholders on this. And he says it's too soon, that it's going to devastate some restaurants and businesses. It's interesting that we're thinking about patio season when there's a wind chill of minus 15 as we're walking in this morning, but it is just around the corner. Andrew Pinsent is here, our CFRA weekend host. John Krupe is here as well from our CTV Ottawa newsroom. I love a patio more than the average person, perhaps. I live on patios in the summer. I love the sunny, wonderful weather. Would love to see all the patios succeed. But I loved as well that Joe talked about all of the different things patios do, not just giving us a chance to sit outside, to be social, to be safe like we were for those couple of years when we couldn't gather indoors, but they also help decorate the city. They're putting out their tables and their plants. People feel safer when there are patios happening in the evening. The city bringing back these fees and doing something to hurt an industry that, you know, was booming during the pandemic and was a lifesaver for restaurants that are just hanging on and maybe the last straw right now, seems like a really, really oddly timed move. What are your thoughts on this, John?
Well, Joe is an expert on patios, as he said. He's been dealing with patio rules and regulations, size, you know, you can't right-of-ways. And let's just rewind, 3 years to the pandemic. The city basically threw out the patio rule book, right? you know, no fees, sure, on the road. We have got to help small businesses. You heard the former mayor. We got to do everything we can. And now, 3 years later, people are acting like the pandemic is over and city is gearing up for more fees. And you got to think, you know, is there a sliding scale they should have used instead of going 50% maybe? And Joe makes some good points. You know, you just look at downtown. I mean, the Byward Market's going to be busy. We know that. But downtown and places like Somerset and Richmond Road, different cases. So maybe they should have used a different model. And maybe they say there was no consultation. Maybe they should have reached out first.
This is what Lindsay Thompson with the King Eddie in the Byward Market told CTV. It's been a nice couple of years not having to pay it because business has been so difficult. Going forward, if we could have just one more summer to get ahead of the ripple effect that's really left us a bit behind. So just a little bit more time to kind of get things back to normal before they start paying those fees again. Andy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and particularly with, you know, another tourism season coming, it would be nice, obviously, for them to kind of recover that as much as possible or get as much revenue as you could. I think communication definitely the key here when you're talking to, you know, making a move here after so many years of not charging fees. But I know restaurants have been expecting this. So like John says, maybe it was a sliding scale or something like that. But the idea that, you know, everybody's going to be coming down to a patio, we're 5 days out from spring. So to have this, you know, sprung on a business owner, I guess, is pretty tough for sure.
Well, here's the other part, right? As I try to defend local business, they have the alcohol tax kicking in April. Joe mentioned that as well. And Paul Meek is the president of Kitchissippi Beer Company. He says that is going to hurt our local breweries as well.
We cannot afford to, you know, absorb a full, you know, 6%+ increase on our taxes. So we're not saying don't increase it. We're just saying let's keep it in the 1-3 range that you're looking at, because it's the highest tax increase the industry's seen in over 40 years.
It's a lot. It's a lot happening all at once. When we want to see a resurgence, we want to see that, you know, that return to just a vibrant city. It just feels like there's a lot that's coming down at business owners all at once right now, John.
And that's what it's been for the last year. It's been a lot of everything at the same time. And so now we have, a slow economy. We have this tax coming in on April 1st. Also, by the way, April 1st, the carbon tax goes up. So, you know, here we go again. Everything's happening at once. And as Paul said, maybe, you know, we can live with 1% to 3%. The thing with this tax, it's an excise tax, so it's linked to inflation. Inflation 6%. When it was 1%, oh, nope, you know, we can absorb that. But when you put everything together, that's, you know, it's just like the patios. It's the cumulative effect.
We've all sat on a patio before on St. Paddy's Day, I think, had that experience in March. Friday, March 17th, periods of snow, a high of zero. Andy, will you be out there?
Oh, I think you might have to go down to the neighborhood watering hole just to have one. Because it's been so long since we've been able to have some of the in-person St. Paddy's Day stuff. But
yeah, but yeah, you can go inside.
Yeah, I'll probably have, like, I don't know, a couple, but I don't think I'll be, you know, letting loose like our compatriots down at the University of Ottawa or Carleton University.
Well, yeah.
Or Kingston.
We're too old. When it takes you a weekend to recover, you think a lot about what you're doing on your Friday afternoon. And you have to work the weekend, so you need to be good on Friday.
That's right. And I'm Bill Carroll tomorrow, so even worse, right?
Oh, what time is the alarm set for tomorrow? I was complaining about my sleep. I want to live vicariously through you.
Oh, 4 o'clock, but I haven't said it yet. I'm not. It's too early.
You're debating. Get some sleep today. It'll be great. I will get up at 4 with you and hopefully go back to sleep, because that's kind of how my sleep system seems to roll. 9:15 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We'll look forward to hearing more of Andrew tomorrow morning. And right after the break here, we're going to talk about the Senators. They lose again. And what is going on with the police? After that hockey game, you know, the charity hockey game, there was a picture getting some attention.
It was even after one, and then three for the Oilers in period two broke this game open, and Ottawa just could not come back, and they fall here tonight 6-3.
Yeah, if you couldn't stay up, if maybe you're on a better sleep schedule than I am and you were in bed before this was done, 6-3, the loss for Ottawa. In Edmonton, good news is maybe the second best player in hockey right now had a good night, scoring twice to reach 100 points for the season. Talking about Leon Draisaitl, who plays alongside Connor McDavid, of course, for Edmonton. I knew this was going to be a tough game for Ottawa, but sometimes they rise their level of play to kind of meet the level of their opponent. So you kind of think, surely that's got to be it. After winning five in a row, they've now lost three in a row, losing four of five on this Western road trip. Come right back home. They have Colorado here tomorrow. They play the Leafs on Saturday, but they haven't really lost a lot of ground in that very crowded wild card race. The two teams that they are chasing and a couple other teams that are neck and neck with them all lost in regulation last night. I'll ask the Rangers fan, the Leafs fan here, Andrew Pinsent and John Krupe, who are with me. Are they absolutely done, Andy?
I hope not. I really hope not. They're closing in there. They definitely have to stop losing games and getting 2 points on each night that they're playing. But it is such a great buzz to have around the team when they are fighting for a playoff spot. It's been night and day, right, from the last few years that it has been. So it is always great for the city when the Senators are doing well. And it's really nice to see them pushing for a playoff spot, because that was the expectation this year.
Krupe, I imagine you're less optimistic.
Well, the other teams didn't win, so yeah, that's the good thing.
Yeah.
And I was listening to Gord Wilson yesterday, and he mentioned something that I didn't even think about, and that is the time change from Vancouver to Calgary, mm-hmm, and getting in at 3:30, 4 a.m. I mean, they played much better yesterday.
You guys are very generous today. So tired group, tough on the road. They could come
back. I watched
the
game. You know, we're talking about Connor McDavid. Edmonton's a good team. I mean, they may be in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, well, speaking of Stanley Cup, it's Colorado tomorrow.
They beat Montreal 8-4 easy.
Doesn't get real easy from here. But it's still interesting. Like you say, with those other teams losing, there's still a possibility. And I'm all about embracing the moments when we have them. And that week here that they had right before they left on the road trip, that was so sensational. I take that for what it was, whether or not it means.
Did anyone think they were going to win all four games?
Graham Richardson, I think, did.
Oh.
As soon as things start to go well, he's just fully invested, all in, tweeting out that they're going to make the playoffs. Uh-oh. I've already blamed him if they don't. So we're all good there.
We could be a Leafs fan, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. This is a little bit more serious, kind of a hockey story. We covered this, the police fire charity game on the weekend, a lovely thing, raising money for the University of Ottawa Heart Institute. Now, there's a bit of a commotion about one of the pictures of the Ottawa Police Service team and their decision to wear the thin blue line symbol on their jerseys at this charity hockey game. It's worn as a patch. They're not allowed to wear it on their uniforms because of late it has been sometimes associated with more extreme far right groups. But these jerseys were apparently given by the Ottawa Police Association, so the players' union, essentially. The association spokesperson, other people say this is about solidarity as a police force, as a group of officers that are remembering their fallen officers, and this is not about any kind of extreme movement, and this is much ado about nothing. City Councilor Ariel Troster is one of those people who tweeted it out and said it was unacceptable that the use of the patch at all must be outlawed, this symbol, this thin blue line symbol. I don't even know much about it. I haven't heard a lot of talk about it here in Canada. What are your thoughts on this, John? Does this bother you seeing this in the picture, or is this much ado about nothing?
You know, it's this thin blue line has been co-opted by, as you say, extreme right groups. The history of it goes back to 1854. I read about it this morning. But I remember it being an issue regarding riots in L.A. and, of course, in New York with some of the police actions when people died in the hands of police. It just means so much to so many people. And what that means to me is that when we have that, you need to sit down and have a sort of a trust and understanding of each other, which doesn't happen today in our world today, because the interpretation is all over the map, right? Is it about Black Lives Matter and marginalized communities and being threatened?
You make an excellent point, though, John, and I haven't looked into enough background to know. But did Ariel tweet this out, or did she call them? Did she have a conversation with them? Did she say, what does this mean to you guys, or why was this done, or where does this come from?
I think she said she called
you?
The police chief.
called the police chief. More conversation, less immediate canceling, immediate, you know, I mean, we're doing it here on the radio. We try to draw quick conclusions on stuff and give our opinions and everything. It's dangerous sometimes when we're doing that from, you know, without a lot of knowledge to underscore it. I know I saw immediately people responding to that tweet saying, hey, my brother's a police officer. My friends are police officers. I don't like the fact that you're right away getting on them about this when I think they're doing it with very, very good intentions. I don't know, Andy, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, the middle ground is dead, it seems like, right?
Just
having a conversation and moving forward. But but to me, this just, I don't know, it seems this symbol has already been banned by the RCMP. You know, there is a lot of, I guess, interpretations of it. It has a history, but the idea that, you know, this has already been in the news because it's been associated with far-right groups, the RCMP has already banned it as well. So I don't know. It just kind of, it smells to me like the police association kind of looking for a fight in some aspect too. But hopefully they can move past this. But the idea that, you know, this obviously bothers people. It's a craw in certain communities. I don't know why the police would want to stand up for that, right? The idea that, you know, you're representing a community. They're talking to you. They're telling you this bothers them. You should probably listen.
Yeah. It was a conversation that will continue today. I think we'll be talking more about this. Just very quickly, Andy, I know you were very involved in coverage of this, the Freedom Convoy. You remember that last winter? The class action lawsuit has expanded to include more potential downtown Ottawa plaintiffs, adding more defendants. They're expanding the boundaries on this. What do you think of that?
Well, I think I can retire now. I'm now in the zone for this.
There you go.
I think I noticed they did expand the zone kind of further on into Lower Town as well. But, you know, the process is playing out. We'll see how it goes. But I think there is going to be some kind of remuneration or award here. I don't know how much we're going to see per resident, but they've got a couple hundred million bucks to draw from a GoFundMe. So we'll see how it all squares out.
Could be the feeling of a moral victory, John.
Does Pierre Poilievre qualify since, you know, the work of the House of Commons was disrupted?
Oh.
We'll see.
I thought you meant his Nepean residence.
Maybe he can put in some receipts in for the donuts he gave them.
Oh.
Okay.
John,
I'm sorry.
It sounds like you have an opinion. Coming up to 9:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA, John Croupier, CTV Ottawa assignment editor, Andy Pinson as well. You'll hear him tomorrow filling in for Bill Carroll here on The Morning Rush. You back Friday as well, Andy?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
So I'll be around, tired and around.
All right, good stuff.
Look
forward to that. Tired and around. That could be the name of our show right here, Tired and Around. A lot of that happening. We are going to keep the conversation going, though, after 9:30. A new study that says a growing number of Canadians are aging. We know our population is aging. There's a lot of us getting up there, doing it, though, without support, without a partner, or without children nearby. What does that mean for those people and for the rest of us as a society? We'll get into that coming up in just a moment. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
With Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
9:40 on News Talk 580 CFRA, asking you about those patio fees this morning. Karen in Orleans says, why are there patio fees at all? Don't they pay taxes? Well, there are fees, and they're fairly hefty, but they're coming back at 50%. Let us know your thoughts on this. Do you think they should be given one more year to kind of get things up and running and back to normal before the city starts hitting restaurants with those patio fees? Jeff, also on the police symbol situation, so tired of the anti-police activist nonsense. They've been wearing the same jersey for the last 10 years, long before all this recent nonsense. They are being called out as they played for charity. Give me a break. So sick of this craziness. Your thoughts on any of those news items this morning? Would love to hear from you. 580-580. We also want to talk about this. And I'm learning some new words this morning as I'm looking at a Citizen article that was written up about this study. Kinless. A growing number of Canadians are kinless. You know, you have your kin, your family, your next of kin. Well, kinless means an older adult with neither a spouse nor living children. They're also called solo agers or even elder orphans, which kind of sounds very, very sad. Policymakers say it's partly because we have smaller families, right? You used to have lots of kids who could all look after an aging parent, typically. Now, often there's only one or two, or they're not in the city. People move around a lot more. Marriages break up at an increasing rate. So sometimes people have been on their own for a very long time. That becomes an issue as they are aging. How much of a concern is this? Dr. Samir Sinha is on the line, Director of Health Policy Research at the National Institute on Aging and Director of Geriatrics at Sinai Health and University Health Network. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So this makes sense that this is an increasing problem, and we certainly learned a little something about loneliness and isolation and how devastating that can be for some members of our community over the last couple of years during the pandemic. What is concerning generally about these numbers that we're seeing right now?
I think it's a healthy reminder that one of the downsides, if you will, to longevity and social progress is that we're seeing that more people are living longer than ever before. So we may be more likely to outlive family members and friends. Less of us are having children, and so because of that, we may not have, you know, the large family networks, as you said, that we would traditionally be able to rely on. And so while this is a challenge, I think it's also an opportunity to say, how do we make sure that people don't end up, if you will, aging alone? And how do we help people, you know, build those networks? And so we sometimes talk about your biological family, but we know that those people who can actually continue to build good social networks throughout their lives with families, with friends and other folks, for example, or more distant relatives, are ways in which people can continue to have strong social networks, which helps you stay independent longer and helps stave off loneliness and social isolation.
Do we need more programs that would help people to stay in their homes, for example, if they are alone? We did something on the Meals on Wheels program the other day. You get a hot meal during the day. There's someone who checks in. There's someone to talk to if they have the time, if they're not so overburdened by the demand on a program like that. Some of those things, are they going to become increasingly necessary as people are aging?
Yeah, I think the first part is just reminding people that, one of the consequences of living healthier lives is you could live longer than you expected, and you might outlive family members and friends. And if you choose not to have children, you may be at risk of being more isolated as you age. So how do we, make sure that people have that in the back of their mind so they can be more proactive in looking for those opportunities to continue to build out social networks and focus on doing that so that they can enter those later years with a strong network. So that's part of it, is just, when you tell people that, they're like, gosh, didn't think about that. And there are things that I can proactively do. But to your other point, we can look at various programs that we do have, or the importance of certain types of programming that brings people together through maybe recreational or other activities and allows them to, again, have opportunities to build social networks. And then the other part is also looking at programs like the ones you mentioned, sometimes Meals on Wheels. We've just published a paper looking at the idea of having postal workers also do friendly check-ins for some older adults who'd like that support so that they can know they have someone checking in on them. Because that's something that France and Japan have leveraged their postal services to do quite successfully. And it's something that we can also look at doing here in Canada. So there's lots of little things that we can do. But if we don't think about this, it becomes one of those other issues in the fray here that if we neglect it, it could be problematic in its own right.
Mm. Are there two different groups here? Are there those older adults who chose not to have children or do not have children, so there is sort of no one in the picture who's an option? And then is there also a group of adults where they have children or a child but maybe is not living anywhere close? And I wonder, too, if there's a bit of a societal thing at play. We know in certain countries and in certain communities within our country, there are those people who absolutely plan to bring their older parents in to live with them in the home when they get to a certain age, if they're not okay to be on their own. There are others whose approach is that, my parents probably wouldn't want that. They wouldn't want to come and live with me. So, we're going to find a senior's residence. We're going to find a home and whatnot. And there's more of a move for people, to retire when they do retire early, maybe to move away, to go somewhere warm. And, I'm thinking, I'm here in the city. I'm the only one of my three siblings who's here. My parents are 80. That's going to influence your choices. But are there two different groups there, whether they have kids at all or whether those kids are actually around to be of help?
I think you just explained, you know, the complexities of aging and the fact that I always say you meet one older person, you meet one older person. It's not even, you know, kind of two groups. It's many different groups in many different situations. And often we kind of bring these kind of older notions or traditional notions saying, okay, well, you know, the children shouldn't move away, you know, and they should stay close and they should bring mom and dad into the house and do those things. And yes, there's some people and families and cultures that are more likely to do that. But also, you know, the realities of a society where economic opportunities are more geographically distant. And one of the markers of progress is when people can move around and do things to kind of further their careers and lives. It's things become more complicated. You also noted the idea that sometimes just because you have, you know, a parent or a child or that doesn't mean everybody will get along. We know that, you know, family situations can become incredibly complex. People can become estranged. And I always say, you know, you can choose your friends, you can't necessarily choose your family. So there's all these sorts of layers that start playing into it. But I think this is where we can't overly program and say, you know, this is kind of what everybody needs to do and this is how everyone needs to behave. We just have to be more conscientious of the fact that this is going to be a growing phenomenon for a whole bunch of different reasons. And if you don't actually have biological family members that you can get along with and might be part of a social network, you know, can you, you know, create, you know, new, you know, chosen family members, you know, good friends that, you know, you can form a network that you can rely upon. And that's how people can kind of better strengthen and leverage, because it's not about these people have to be your family members or these people have to be your friends. It's just about having people in your lives around you who you care about and who care about you so that you can support each other as you age.
I love that. You met one older person, you've met one older person. Generalizations pushed off to the side. But then let me throw this at you then, because I think this sort of aligns with some of what you said. Do we need to be thinking outside the box a little bit more? Because I, for a long time, have had a Golden Girls fantasy, which doesn't sound great. But the idea that when you're older, maybe if you are on your own, you find friends who are similar age and you share a home and maybe one of you isn't able to drive anymore, but one of you can, but, you know, can't cook or whatever. And you find a way to make it work in a sort of a different situation that's maybe atypical. And then we had the story the other day. Yeah, you got a bunch of money. You can probably retire on a cruise ship for a few years just as cheaply as you can in a senior's home. Do we need to start thinking of sort of other options that maybe aren't as traditional, but that may actually work very well?
Absolutely. And so we've written a number of papers to the NIA looking at kind of, you know, how do you enable kind of aging in the right place? And we talk about this idea of what you just described, the, you know, the Golden Girls piece, as kind of what we call co-housing, where a bunch of people come together and they might share a house, for example. And we've had a challenge in Ontario where some municipalities just don't allow that. Others do, for example. And so even the government at one point had an act that didn't get passed, but they had proposed it, and they were actually even nicknaming it the Golden Girls Act, so that it was something that could allow people who wanted that option to be able to have it. And so it's an example of, yeah, we need to get creative because life's getting more complicated, you know, circumstances are changing, and we need to really be flexible because, again, we shouldn't be dictating how people should live their lives, but we should make sure that people are thinking about the importance of maintaining a good social network. There's different ways in which we can support each other, maybe by living together, by staying more connected and checking in. And by doing that, we know that people who are more socially connected than others live longer lives. They live happier lives, less lonely lives. And so there's a huge value in terms of thinking out of the box and thinking about programs and services that don't just focus on maybe delivering a good, but also might also support developing social connections as well.
It's an excellent conversation, obviously one we need to continue to have. So many great ideas out there, university residents, students living with senior home residents, that kind of thing. Lots we can talk about, but I appreciate your time this morning, and the work you do is very, very interesting. Dr. Sinha, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Samir Sinha is Director of Health Policy Research at the National Institute on Aging and Director of Geriatrics at Sinai Health and the University Health Network. 9:51 on News Talk 580 CFRA. It is Wednesday when we come back. Michael Woods will be here. Web Wednesday with Woods. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bolton.
Listen anytime, anywhere, through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
9:55 on News Talk 580 CFRA. It's Web Wednesday with Woods. Michael Woods is here. Our question of the day today: do you agree with the fees on patios? Mark and Cara says no taxes on patios, not until LRT can get people to and from the core reliably. Don't want to encourage drinking and driving. Patios are awesome. People are clicking on this story about patios this morning. The fees being reinstated after the pandemic break, but at a 50% level. Michael Woods, what do you think? They're sympathetic to the plight of the restaurant owners?
I think it's March and people are just excited to think about patios, probably, is why people are interested.
Minus 15 wind chill this morning.
A little chilly. I do think, I mean, Tim Tierney, who's in this story, the chair of the Transportation Committee, is right. You can't just like have free patios forever. This is city sidewalks, and if you're a business and you want to use it, you should have to pay some sort of fee. I think the issue here is, first of all, it's the jump to 50% right away. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been possibly a little easier on some of these businesses to do a kind of escalation. So maybe it's 10% one month, maybe it's 30% the next month, kind of work up to it. And then the other issue is they just feel like they weren't consulted. A lot of these business owners who have had patios in the city for years are saying, look, just like, let's come to an agreement together. And they feel like it was just kind of imposed. So those are kind of the two things. They did have a three-year break from the patio fees, but of course that was because they had all the pandemic stuff. So,
how many times a summer would you say you sit on a patio?
Oh man, fewer than I would like.
But you're probably above average.
Not as above average as you. I know you love. You're the person I know.
Because I hate
patios
air conditioning, right? So if it's a warm, sunny day, I'm going to be out on the patio for sure, and not in the air conditioning, putting on a sweater that I get to wear all year inside. Anyway, I absolutely love the patio. I feel like the patio was a sort of a lifesaver through the pandemic, and I like this idea of one more summer. Give them one more summer to really have a full on business and just save that money and maybe think about reinstating those fees next summer. One of the two. They should do one of the two.
I will say, obviously, the pandemic was, you know, awful for many, many reasons. But one of the things that I hope comes out of it is this increased use of outdoor space. So we had like Somerset closed, right?
Bigger patios.
O'Connor and Bank. Yeah, they set up all kinds of patios. Just like more outdoor, you know, space for either that or for other communal things. Like, so people can spend more time outside.
We heard from Joe this morning, was talking to Bill, just saying, you know, the patio owners are kind of decorating that street space. They're putting out plants. They're making their patios look good. By extension, those city streets look good. People feel safer in the evening as they're walking down the sidewalk when there are more patios. And I'm kind of like, yeah, like I just think about myself sitting on the patio, enjoying my moment. But I think all of that kind of makes sense. And the more vibrant they are, you know, the better it is for the city.
It does create a vibrancy and a sort of, you know, a togetherness, I think, that is only beneficial for these neighborhoods.
You have a story in here, completely switching gears, that's attracted a lot of attention about an Ottawa Valley woman who was charged with animal cruelty after 38 dogs were found in what the head of a local rescue agency described as traumatizing conditions. I know they were still looking for foster families for some of those dogs yesterday when we went to air at 6 o'clock. You've had some feedback on this?
Yeah, I checked in with Riverview Rescues this morning. This is the group that took in all 38 of these dogs at first. Some of them have since been sent to other rescue agencies. But they told me this morning that after our story, there was an amazing outpouring from people, both donations and also applications to be foster families. So, you know, way to come out for those of you who saw this, who haven't seen this story, it's 38 dogs that were found that were just in these horrible conditions, and some of them the male dogs were being kept in cages, the female dogs were just kind of roaming aimlessly. Mm-hmm. They had all kinds of medical problems. They all had Lyme disease. They had scratches on their faces, bite marks. Some of them had really serious problems. So they need foster families, and a ton of people have stepped up. So thank you to everyone who has. It was a really, really tough story, but yeah, it's ultimately, as always, as these things often are, a good news story.
Yeah,
a
really tough story, but great to see people going online, clicking on that, finding out that information, and then maybe thinking about how they can help if they're in a position to.
Yeah.
I'd love to be in a position to, but I think two dogs is enough. And just very quickly, we only have a few seconds. I imagine people are checking this. This is also a story you have online on our CTV Ottawa website. along with Glenn McGregor, our CTV National News political correspondent, that this boundary has expanded for the proposed class action lawsuit over the Freedom Convoy. I'm sure a lot of people just want to know, does it now affect them?
So the lawyer, Paul Champ, who's heading this up, says that now about 15,000 downtown residents are captured by this area. And his goal is to turn this into a class action lawsuit so that anyone who lives or works or was affected by somehow the convoy protest and lives or works in that area will be eligible for damages. And the other interesting thing that they're doing with this lawsuit, which there's more details, if everybody can go to the website and read it. But basically, they're trying to create not only class actions on the plaintiff's side, but classes on the defendant's side. So, for example, they've also, along with expanding the boundary, they've expanded the number of defendants in the case. They've chosen a particular donor who donated $75,000 to the convoy organizers, and they've chosen a particular truck company owner who sent about 10 semis to park downtown. And they said, rather than naming all these Jane Does and John Does who were here, they're naming them as representative defendants. So, like, this person represents all the donors, anyone who donated a certain amount, and this person represents all the truckers, some about 400 who came downtown to park. And they're saying that if this goes forward, all of those folks could be liable for damages. And they're asking for $290-ish million. So, hasn't been certified yet. The class action has to be certified later this year, and that's the whole thing. But if they're successful at that, then, you know, it'll really kick into gear.
Fascinating to see how all of this plays out. All right, Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michael Woods, Web Wednesday with Woods. When we come back, we have an Ottawa-born artist who won a Juno Award for Blues Album of the Year. That's next. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
On the go, take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull.
And the Juno for Blues Album of the Year goes to Angélique Francis.
Thank you so much for this. What an incredible honor. I want to thank Karis and the Ontario Arts Council and everyone who has supported my album, Long River. I want to say a huge congratulations to all of the nominees, and especially for the blues category. Every single one of those nominees deserves to be up here right now.
A lovely speech from Angélique Francis, who won the Juno Award for Blues Album of the Year the other night and joins us now. Congratulations, Angélique.
Thank you so much.
That was a lovely speech, pumping up your fellow nominees as well. It was great. Tell me about that moment and hearing your name called.
Oh my gosh, it was such a wonderful moment. It was so great to be recognized for all the hard work that me and my team put in, and I was so proud of all that we have accomplished together.
You are very well deserving by all accounts, as I read different reviews of your music and some of what people love about you. Powerhouse vocals seems to be a phrase that comes up often, but you're very, very gifted, very talented to play a number of instruments. Tell me where your love of music came from.
Oh, thank you so much. I love music for so many different reasons. And I think one of the most amazing things about music is that it's such a unique form of communication. I think it can allow us to connect with each other in ways that is so special and unique to this art form. And so I got into music because it helped me discover who I am as a person. It helped me meet some of my greatest friends. And I wanted to use it as a power to help influence other people and help them make it through in the same way that music has inspired and created growth within myself.
You were born and raised right here in Ottawa.
Yes, I am. And I'm still located here.
Still here in Ottawa. Who inspired you here? What is the music scene like here? Is it easy when you start to show some talent and promise really early to find ways to make that career happen?
Yes, I think Ottawa is such an incredible city for so many different reasons. One of which, they have such a supportive environment. There are many different musical scenes here. There's a huge jazz and blues scene. There's a hip-hop scene. There's so many different people who are willing to give opportunities in whatever shape or form. And I also think it's such a lovely location. I think that one can make a career and never have to leave Ottawa because you have family here, you have a community here. And then it's also an in-between point between, you know, Toronto, Montreal, the border. There's so many different options in Ottawa.
That is a lovely thing to hear. You played the Jazz Festival here before, right?
Yes, I've played the Ottawa Jazz Festival, okay. The Ottawa Blues Festival, Ottawa Grassroots Festival.
All of those, yes. And in February, you were on the NAC stage as well?
Yes, I was.
So lots of opportunities, and you are obviously being shown the love by people here, right here in Ottawa as well.
Yes, I feel so appreciative to receive so much love and support.
Do you know whether you'll be back at the Jazz Festival this year? I was trying to have a quick look at the schedule to see. I know they're adding some performers still, so I don't know if it's a full schedule that I'm looking at, but do you know if you have any plans for that this summer?
Unfortunately, I have no current plans right now for the Ottawa Jazz Festival. However, there are some other great performances coming up in Ottawa and all across Canada. We'll be doing a big tour across Canada this summer. But for future details about my venues and festival bookings, you can go to my website, angeliquefrancis.net, to see the evolving schedule.
Okay, awesome, because we'll play a little music from you before we let you go. So for some people who might just be discovering you, they might be thinking about where they can see you next, and I love that is available there. Tell me about being at the Junos. Was there anyone you met in the Canadian musical scene that you wanted to meet, maybe your genre of music or something completely different? Who were you excited to see there?
Oh my goodness, there were so many amazing people there. I met some of the night's televised winners. I met Banks and Ranks and Rev. I thought they were really cool people. And I also think that there are so many amazing people from some of the other genres. Our table had some great nominees. And I was also really excited to see a fellow nominee, Shakira Saeeda. She's an incredible musician. And it was great to share that moment with all of them.
Very, very cool. I'll tell you who one of my favorites is in this business, who really inspired me, would be Oprah Winfrey. And I know you got to make your American National TV debut, not on the Oprah Show, but on the Oprah Network. And did you actually write and compose a theme song for the Gayle King Show?
I did. I was 13 years old at the time, and it was so incredible to be recognized for another aspect of my music, such as songwriting and composition. And it was really great to make connections with people on that end as well.
That's amazing. What are your hopes for the future? Where would you like to go from here? What have you not done that you would still love to do?
Oh, there's so many things. There's so many things in the work for the summer that'll be new for us as well. And I'm really excited for the new music that will be coming out in a few months. I also have a music video coming up in the next few weeks. And I'm excited for, you know, this is only a beginning to an exploration of, you know, the consolidation of different forms of blues and the genres that it helped to influence. We have so much more to show the world, and we're just so grateful for the platform that this Juno win will allow us to have.
And you write a lot of your own music?
Yes, all of the music on my albums are completely original. We have some more originals coming up.
Which part of that process do you like the most? The writing, the initial, when you're coming up with an idea, you're putting it together, the composing, or is it when you get to get out on stage and perform and feel the love from an audience?
Well, it's very much an evolving process. So some songs are born as a spur of the moment. I'm influenced by the different things I see, the stories, and I love just having the ability to express those emotions and stories through song. But I also think that when I get up on stage and I perform them, songs often change depending on how an audience interacts with it. And they'll ultimately influence how an album is formed or how a song is formed. Long River, this album, looks a lot different than what it had originally planned out to be because of input from audience members and from fans. We wanted to choose something that would really connect with people on a deeper level, and so we allowed that to influence how our album was shaped. It's very much an album that was shaped off of the live music experience.
When it's your baby like that, to be rewarded with a Juno for all of that effort, it must just feel absolutely incredible.
It's beyond words. It is absolutely incredible.
We very much enjoyed talking to you today. We're going to leave the audience with a little bit of Storms from My Eyes for those who are just just getting introduced to your music, or maybe those who've been enjoying it for years. Angelique, thank you so much, and best of luck to you with all of your future projects.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me today.
That is Angelique Francis, a winner of the Juno Award for Best Blues Album this year. 1018 on News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Welcome back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
10:36 on News Talk 580 CFRA. The Ottawa Senators are flying back to the nation's capital today after a road trip that did not go the way they would have wanted it to. So they're having discussions, or maybe internal thoughts right now, about how they can turn it around, regroup. They have a game against Colorado tomorrow night. A very good Colorado team, knows a little something about winning. And against the Leafs on Saturday as well. And then next week, they will be at home on March 23rd to Tampa Bay. And we have a four-pack of tickets for you right now to get there. As they're trying to put a winning streak back together, they might be right in the middle of another one, because the way this season has gone, it is up, it is down, it is all over the place, and it is always, always interesting. We would love to put you into the seats at the Canadian Tire Center. We are going to give this four-pack of tickets away right now to caller number 16. Let's go caller number 16, because that's not the date. That's the date tomorrow. And that's confusing for you. Caller number 16. As long as PJ keeps track of it, we're all good. 613-521-TALK, 521-8255 for your chance to win a four-pack of tickets to see the Sens play the Lightning on March 23rd. See, we can have fun when we stay right here in Ottawa. There's lots of fun things to do here in Ottawa, although some of us would probably prefer to be traveling. A lot of people are traveling right now for March break week, of course. And before they travel, they get online and they Google and they figure out their destinations. And that produces some interesting results about the whole travel industry for us. Matt Smith is here, head of travel industry at Google Canada. Good morning, Matt.
Yes, how you doing, Patricia?
I am doing very well. So when people are Googling travel options, is staycation one of the things they Google as well as their potential destinations?
You know, not as much anymore. I think, you know, right now, spring break is officially here, and travel searches on Google are showing some serious strength. They're actually surpassing 2019 levels. I think, you know, this is sending a big message to us, is that Canadians are continuing to prioritize travel when it comes to how they want to spend their savings. And this is even during, you know, like as the cost of travel has increased dramatically, and also during a time of economic headwinds.
Yeah. I mean, travel has increased in terms of price. There's been more headaches in terms of airport situations, but it's worth it for a lot of people because they have gone a couple of years without and they're desperate to get down to some of those sun destinations, right? What would be the one of the main spots that people are, I mean, we always think about Florida here in Ottawa. Does that continue to be one of the headliners?
Yeah, I think, I mean, taking a look at spring break specifically, definitely Canadians are craving the sun and really want to escape this extended winter that we're experiencing. So as you mentioned, you know, topping the list are some of the usual suspects like Orlando, Miami, Fort Lauderdale. But we're also seeing Hawaii from the U.S. perspective is getting its fair share of interest as well. And you know, like then, of course, we've got the Caribbean. So the Dominican Republic, Cuba, Jamaica are also some of this year's top spots. And I think what's more is that all of these destinations are seeing greater than 50% growth in searches compared to the same time last year.
Is there a breakdown of that geographically? I would imagine here in Ontario, I mean, it's a direct shot right down to Florida. That's where a lot of us think about going. But I know, having been out west, that Hawaii is super popular for people who live in Vancouver, where it's a little bit easier to get to. Does it tend to differ like that depending on where people are in the country?
Yeah, you've got it for sure. Like, these are more general trends overall, but for sure, if you're on the West Coast, you know, your Florida, I guess, is more so California or Hawaii. Whereas, you know, as you mentioned, like from the east side, that straight shot makes it a lot easier, and that's where Florida really pops.
Is spring break or March break really the busiest time of year for winter travel? Is that when most people try to spend their vacation dollars? And how does that change into the summertime?
Yeah, I think so. So that, you know, typically is one of the highest periods. I mean, there is, like, this is what we call peak season right now from January till, and you know, until end of March. There is a pop in Q4, so as we go into the holidays. But a lot of people, and I think this is what's really interesting, is that the idea of Black Friday, Cyber Monday, you know, is, you know, traditionally very much a retail focused, you know, event. It's really become increasingly more travel focused. So we saw a lot of, you know, people booking during that period, both for the end of the year, but also, you know, for the spring break period. The summer period is also actually really starting to pop right now. So we're seeing that movement back to pre-pandemic booking behaviors. So Canadians are starting to plan a lot further ahead, whereas the last couple of years, you know, given the uncertainty, given some of the restrictions and challenges traveling, you know, we did see a lot of last minute booking behavior. So right now, summer booking well underway. And I think what's exciting here is, you know, like, you'll always see the U.S., you know, and like, and domestic travel being huge, huge areas of you know, of interest. But this year, when we look at, you know, what's growing most, it really goes back to places like Europe and APAC. So specifically, Southern Europe and Southeast Asia are actually seeing triple digit growth compared with last year. You know, and those are some of the destinations that we really wanted to go to and that we typically go to in the summer. But we haven't really been able to do that, you know, as easily over the last couple of years. So to maybe to drill into it a bit more, some of those top destinations that we're seeing all growing over 75% year on year would be Rome, Shanghai, Athens, Beijing, and Lisbon, you know, top that list.
Well, it's so interesting. I was taking a look at this, the top trending international destinations here as we were in break. And I was thinking we're talking today here in Ottawa, where it's still very wintry, about patio season and the fact that the city is going to charge some patio fees for operators to set up. And I was thinking about Rome, which is a place that I got back to right after the pandemic, was in Italy for my cousin's wedding. And we spent a few days in Rome, and how vibrant that city is, partly because of that beautiful sidewalk patio culture, and people are out and enjoying food and drink and talking. It's so vibrant, and it's interesting to see that at the top of the list, because I've been there a couple of times, but I think I loved it this time even more. And two of the other spots that are on this list in the States that you didn't mention a little further down, Nashville and Vegas, both places that I had trips booked to during the pandemic that I had to cancel. I'm hoping at some point I will get back there. That's on the to-do list, but I'm sure there's a lot of other people who were in a similar position, had been thinking about going to these places for a while, didn't have a chance, and now they are making it happen while they know they can.
For sure, yeah. And I think one thing, like the term revenge travel, I think was thrown out, like, you know, like a bunch of times in the last couple of years. You know, for me, I'm really bullish on travel moving forward. And I feel like it's less of this like pent up demand now that we're seeing. It's more of like, you know, like, of course, we're going to see a normalization. But I do feel like travel is going to become a much bigger part, you know, of people's lives, you know, like moving forward. And of course, you know, like to your point, some of those U.S. destinations like Vegas always top the list in terms of volume. So I do see those coming back in a big way as well.
Just quickly before you go, we were talking about, you know, travel and more people doing it, and the airline industry and everyone else trying to catch up with that demand and get back on track. Are people also Googling good information in terms of how to be a savvy traveler and to do it in a smart way, and taking advantage of some of the sites out there that kind of help you to know the do's and don'ts before you step out the door?
Yeah, I think we're definitely seeing a little bit more of that as well. I think, you know, there have been operational challenges the last couple of years, so people want to avoid that as much as possible. And that comes down to like maybe some trends around people trying to travel at less busy times. So maybe like getting out a couple of days beforehand or coming back a couple of days after everyone else does. But also, you know, again, like it goes back to that pre-planning. So having that longer window that you're taking, planning and booking well in advance, you know, is really going to help you make sure that you have the least stressful kind of travel that you could. And, you know, like, as you mentioned, that whole, like on the airline side, that capacity hasn't fully come back to where it was, you know, back in 2019, yet we're seeing still that surge in demand. So there is going to be a little bit of, you know, of challenge moving forward. But I do think that the airlines and all of that has been very much, you know, worked out, and the operations are running much more smoother than they have in the past.
Getting there. All right. Matt Smith, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Patricia. Have a great day.
Matt is the head of travel industry at Google Canada. We are clicking, we are searching, and we are making plans to travel, whether we are here in Ottawa right now or not. 10:45 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, the high cost of rent in this province. What does that mean for young people who are struggling to afford to pay for apartments or houses? Where are they going when they can't afford the big cost in the city? This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull. When I'm in your eyes, electrified, we'll keep turning
up and go all night. We have dips and falls in our time. Join the conversation on Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull. Text 580-580 right now.
On News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. The good news as we look at rental prices in Ontario is that we're not Toronto just yet. New data from rentals.ca for March shows times are tough for people who are renting. Vancouver and Toronto remain the highest priced cities in terms of renting a one-bedroom apartment. In Toronto, they have broken the $2,500 barrier for a one-bedroom. If you're looking at a two-bedroom, you're talking about $3,300, $3,600 for a two-bedroom in Vancouver. I mean, that's, you know, the money you spend to rent a four-bedroom house, isn't it? Depending where you are. Now, Ottawa's a little bit better. We're a little bit further down the list. Just under $2,000 to rent a one-bedroom here in Ottawa on average, $2,300 or so. For a two-bedroom, it is tough. We were just having an off-air conversation here about how you can maybe rent an apartment, you can maybe have a car, but if you're going to try and do both, you have to be pretty well off. And this is having some interesting results for those young people who are trying to make it work, trying to make ends meet, and are maybe having to think outside the box or think outside the city about their living arrangement in order to be able to afford it. Dr. Mike Moffitt is on the line, Senior Director of Policy and Innovation at the Smart Prosperity Institute. Good morning, Dr. Moffitt.
Good morning.
So you tweeted out yesterday about this price of a one-bedroom apartment in Toronto breaking that $2,500 barrier, and that all of these neighborhoods right around Toronto in the greater Toronto area are also seeing huge increases in listed rents. This is becoming quite unaffordable in the greater Toronto area.
Yeah, absolutely. All across southern Ontario, so the GTA and a lot of college towns like Guelph and Waterloo and my hometown of London, Ontario, we're seeing rents go up 20 to 25% a year. And that's partly that homeowners don't, or potential first-time buyers are staying out of the market, not buying because of these high interest rates. And we've had a big influx of international students and other renters. So we've got all kinds of demand for rental property and not much new supply coming on the market. So this is happening in, again, focused on southern Ontario, but all across the province. And we're seeing here in Ottawa, rents go up 15% a year.
Yeah, it's a big jump. And for young people, it's a refrain we hear constantly, but worried about whether they'll ever be able to afford a house. If they're renting an apartment that is as expensive as that, trying to put a little bit of money aside to save for the massive down payment they'd need for a home in today's world, that's tough times. And for a lot of them, it just means they have to look at completely different options than staying in the big city.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the home price is still being $600,000-$700,000 in places. So you're having to save up $60,000 to $100,000 or more just to make a down payment. And that's hard to do when most of your paycheck is going to paying rent. So we're seeing, and we've seen for some time, younger people leave our larger cities, go out further afield. So here in Ottawa, you know, you get a lot of younger families moving out to Perth and Carleton Place and other communities in the vicinity. But now we're also seeing a lot of young Ontarians move out to Atlantic Canada and Alberta. That combination of much lower cost of living and also the ability to work from home has made younger workers a lot more mobile. And they're using that mobility to move out of the province.
What does that mean for big cities that usually are, you know, thrive on their young, vibrant population? Is that a dangerous thing when a lot of young people start to move out because they just can't afford to be there?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I talked about work from home, and some of them are work from home workers, but not all of them are. You know, we are seeing healthcare workers move to other provinces, you know, and we've got large shortages of them. I mean, we can't afford to lose them. We have a really kind of cruel irony here that we're losing a lot of skilled tradespeople, the electricians, the plumbers, the roofers that we need to build more housing. So because we have a shortage of housing, we can't house the people we need to build more housing. Mm. So that has a sort of a spiral effect if we can't fix it.
And we have the Ontario government introducing a program that would allow more people to get into trades programs and apprenticeships earlier, and high school students to go directly into that, but maybe just to be trained to move out of the province then. And unless there's something that changes all of this trend, is there something that might occur to sort of bring rents down in the foreseeable future?
Well, I think we need to build more housing. You know, if interest rates go down, you know, we might get more people moving into ownership housing, so that could ease the pressure somewhat. But ultimately, our challenges in this province is, you know, for every home out there, there's two or three or more buyers, whether they be renters or buyers. So we need to build those 1.5 million homes that the province is talking about. We haven't seen much of an uptick in home building, but all of our levels of government need to work together to make this happen, or we're simply not going to be able to attract and retain young people in this province.
I have a text from Nancy right now who says, apartments are out of reach for lots of people. We have to rent a room in a house. Do you have any data on that, if more people are doing that, downsizing from even an apartment to just renting a room?
Yeah, we know it's happening. We don't have great data on that. The last data we have is from the 2021 census. But absolutely, we are seeing people renting out more rooms. We are seeing homeowners, you know, convert their properties, put in secondary suites and that kind of thing, which is certainly helpful. It's allowing us to increase our housing supply somewhat. So you are starting to see these creative solutions to the housing shortage.
What's the most affordable place in the country?
So we'd be looking at Alberta's relatively inexpensive. The two cheapest provinces tend to be Saskatchewan and Quebec. So and we're seeing that here in the Ottawa region, that we're losing a lot of people to the other side of the border, the provincial border, simply because prices in Quebec tend to be a fair bit more affordable.
Some people moved back over the border after the pandemic because they didn't like the fact that border could close. And now I've talked to a few people recently who are once again looking on the Gatineau side, thinking it's maybe a better option. So it's funny how those life events kind of affect our thinking, but it will be interesting to watch over the coming months and years and see where this goes. But pretty tough out there for a lot of people right now. I appreciate you shedding some light on it for us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dr. Mike Moffitt is Senior Director of Policy and Innovation at the Smart Prosperity Institute. And again, here in Ottawa, the average price of a one-bedroom apartment, $1,959 on the Gatineau side right now, a little bit cheaper, $1,652 for a one-bedroom apartment, a whole lot better than what they're paying in Toronto, $2,500, $2,640 in Vancouver. It's 11 o'clock. Quick break for the news. When we come back, Graham Richardson will be here. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowles. 10:24 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We were talking about aging and the lonely population earlier and thinking outside the box for options as you get older, particularly for people who maybe are single as they age, maybe don't have kids. Someone mentioned there's a group in Ontario called Single Women Living Together. Fascinating. We're gonna check into that a little bit later, but putting that out there just so you know if that's something that might be affecting you as you make your plans right now. But we want to talk about this. Speaking of older people, love their Facebook, right? It's one of those aging social media platforms that started to fall off a little bit in popularity around some of the other options out there, like an Instagram, like a TikTok. And we know that Jeff Zuckerberg perhaps gambled big in sort of switching the identity and the labeling around the company, Meta. Do we even say Meta very often anymore unless we're analyzing? More layoffs there. What is happening at Meta? Another 10,000 jobs cut. That's the parent group of Facebook. And we talked to Carmi Levy about this before. Is this all just falling apart for Meta? Did they put all their eggs in the wrong basket, or what is going on there? I want to bring him back on and get a little analysis here. Carmi, thank you for being here.
Good to be here, Patricia. Thanks for having me.
Carmi Levy is a tech analyst and journalist. And okay, so you kind of broke this down for us before about just what's going on with Meta and how they're trying to create this whole metaverse that may or may not eventually take off. But hard times right now. What is at the heart of the issue with this company?
Well, I think there are sort of two sort of layers that we need to look at. One is the general trend in the entire tech industry that because that, you know, during the pandemic, demand for their services soared. So their revenues increased. Everybody wanted to advertise on their platforms. We were spending all of our time using these services because we had nothing else to do. And they hired a bunch of people and they grew. Life was good. Now that we're on the far end of the pandemic, everyone's cutting back because we're sort of going back to normal. And as a result, those demand curves are starting to flatten. So the company that owns Google, Alphabet, laying off 12,000, Microsoft laying off 10,000, Amazon, 18,000, Spotify, Shopify, Hootsuite, Salesforce, you name it, everyone's cutting. And of course, Meta 4 months ago in November did the same thing. They cut, you know, a whole bunch of people. Then now here, you know, everyone else is kind of moving on. Meta's got another round of cuts. And that is not because of the pandemic. That is because they should have cut more. The number that they cut in November wasn't big enough. And two, Meta, of all of these companies, is the only one that's also dealing with essentially a midlife crisis, a structural realignment of who they are. Social media, no longer the shiny new thing. And as a result, Mark Zuckerberg has been betting on the metaverse, spending $10 billion a year to build this metaverse platform that not even his own employees want to use. Senior executives begging them to use it, but it's terrible. It's almost like an old 8-bit Nintendo game. So the company is kind of in the middle of this valley. And as a result, as social media revenue flattens out and they're not making any money off metaverse, it's just spend, they've got to cut even more. And so, you know, over and above what the rest of the industry is feeling, Meta essentially backed the wrong horse, has made worse management decisions than other tech companies in its space. And unfortunately, now it pays the price. This is what mismanagement gets you.
Two questions for you. One, did I say Jeff Zuckerberg in my lead up? Did you hear that? I feel like I heard myself say that.
Yeah, he's probably got a cousin named Jeff.
So yeah. Times are so tough. They got rid of Mark. They brought in Jeff because he's cheaper. Why did the stock market like this? Why did shares jump on Tuesday on this news?
Investors love when companies cut staff because they don't really care about long-term outlook. They don't care what happens 3, 4, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. They're not looking long-term. All they care about is my stock price going up? Am I making money now? And that's really been the, you know, as a technologist, watching the stock market either reward or punish tech companies for short-term changes has been one of the great frustrations of my career. And that's exactly here. So basically what they said, we're going to cut people. The stock market read that as, oh, we're going to save some money. And of course, there was language in the announcement saying, this is the year of efficiency. We're going to be more efficient. We're going to watch our costs more. Whether that's strategically intelligent, they don't care. All they see is reducing cash burn. Hopefully the company will be more profitable going forward. Up goes the share and share price. And that's all that matters here. So short-term pop, because that's what always happens when companies cut employees. But I'm looking at the long-term, and the long-term is if they don't figure this metaverse thing out, there is no future for this company. And 5 years from now, we're going to be looking through a very different lens at Mark Zuckerberg. And maybe he even won't be around. Maybe he should be thinking about bringing someone else in who has a different vision.
Hey, Jeff, 10:30, 30 seconds for you. If that all happens, then does Facebook disappear? For those of us who for a time scrapbooked our lives on Facebook and would lose a lot of really valuable photos, does it disappear from the landscape anytime in the near future, do you think?
I don't think it disappears. I think, though, it sort of becomes like a zombie like MySpace, right? Mm. You can still go to MySpace. All your old pages, your GarageBand pages are still there, but no one really cares about it. And I think the truth is no technology lasts forever. Eventually, the world moves on. And that same thing's going to play out with Facebook. The clock is most definitely ticking.
My photo albums are still good. 10:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Thank you so much, Carmi. Appreciate it.
Bye. Thanks, Patricia.
That's Carmi Levy, our tech analyst and journalist on the future of Meta and the metaverse as the Facebook company parent slashes another 10,000 jobs. 10:30 here on News Talk 580 CFRA. Quick break for the news. We're going to talk more about March break travel coming up. Where is everyone who's not right here with us? And rent costs booming in Ontario. Are people moving out of the cities because of that? We'll get into it. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
11:08 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. Hope you're having a good Wednesday morning in the sunshine. Want to remind you those code words we're giving out to you for Taste of Ottawa have to be entered online, CFRA.com. Don't text them to us. Jump online and the winners will be announced tomorrow morning. Three winners every day. We have some developing news around something we've talked about quite a bit over these last several months, food insecurity here in the capital and the growing need for food banks and food centers in our city. Often people who have never had to use them before. And, you know, we've talked over these last few months about some of the innovation around that and how well something called an outdoor community fridge has done. There's a couple of them, but the Parkdale Food Center is a place that we have talked to who has one of those fridges that has worked, you know, very well to make sure people have access to the food they need and also give people the opportunity to place food in there and to keep it stocked. And I think the last time we talked to them, they said they were restocking that fridge several times a day to make sure that people who needed food had it when they, you know, 24 hours when they needed access to it. A system that worked well, except for some reason it seems to have broken down. And we are just seeing this post right now. We're going to try to find out more about this. But Parkdale Food Center posting, effective immediately, we have closed our outdoor community fridge, affectionately known as Roadrunner. Graham Richardson is here in the newsroom downstairs. CTV Ottawa is looking into this. What are they saying are the reasons at this point for having to close down that community fridge?
Well, right now, Patricia, we just have this statement, but, you know, it's kind of opaque, the statement, but not really when you actually get to the end of it. She says, or they say, the realities of poverty are impacting people across the city, reflected in increased tensions and competition for food. All too often, blame and attention is on individuals accessing services and not on the larger systems. So, and they mention homophobia, transphobia, sexism, ageism, ableism. Natalie Van Roy is covering this for us today. She's going to reach out. These are obviously critical pieces of infrastructure for people who are at the line or below the line and need this to continue. So I have to believe that something significant has happened or a series of things has happened for them to take what looks like a pretty drastic move to close the fridge. Now, obviously, they're still operating, the Parkdale Food Center, and it might be as simple as there have been altercations as increased competition for food because of the prices and there's more people going there and they can't regulate it. I don't know. But that would be a distinct possibility when you look at the number of people having to access food banks now. Maybe that's a factor. And maybe clients, there were altercations or fights at the actual fridge because the need is so intense now. It's very, very sad if that's the case.
Hopefully a temporary situation that they can get rectified. It feels like it's tough to do a good thing and have it just sit in isolation. There always seems to be complications around it. And we've talked about so many times in so many different ways here, just tough times for a lot of people. Just before you came up, we were talking to someone about rent. I think it's a gentleman you've spoken with before, actually, Dr. Mike Moffitt.
Oh, he's excellent Western, right?
How out of control the rents are now, and certainly in a couple of the really big cities, it's just terrible. Like, can you imagine being able to afford rent in Vancouver if you need to find a place for your family? And the average price of a two-bedroom apartment is over $3,600 there. Vancouver and Toronto and almost everywhere around Toronto. But bad enough in Ottawa here now where it's almost $2,000 on average for a one-bedroom apartment in this city. There's not enough affordable housing. There's not enough housing in some of these bigger cities. Of course, we know the Ontario government has really been trying to find some solutions to rectify that problem and get homes built more quickly. That was part of the incentive behind giving mayors and big cities in this province a little extra power to get things done more quickly. This new program that's getting people out into the trades, out of high schools, more quickly into
the
trades.
It's the number one priority for the provincial government is to build more housing, and they say it's literally because of this issue. And what Moffitt is excellent at is he, for months, for years actually, has been ringing the alarm bells, not just about Toronto and Vancouver and even Ottawa, the Londons, the Kitcheners, the Kingstons.
All of those spots.
The way it ripples out, you know, to the point where, you know, and he points out and others have pointed out, you compare the costs in the prairie cities now to the costs in the Ontario cities of basic rent, and you wonder why young people are leaving this province.
And
one
of the things that he said, talking about that program that was just very recently introduced, that potential to get kids out of high school more quickly if they're leaning in that direction and get them into apprenticeship programs and get them out into the trades and filling some of those spots, is that the irony is that you're actually losing some of the people in those trades because they cannot afford the price of rent here. So the people that could be helping to deal with our housing crisis and building up some of those homes are going elsewhere to find a more affordable home. Amanda texting in from Carleton Place this morning saying the rental prices there in Carleton Place, much worse than Ottawa. It doesn't matter if it's a house or an apartment, you're looking at anywhere from $2,100 to $3,000 a month, not inclusive. Rooms for rent are now starting around $1,000 a month. Someone
in
else
Carleton
texted
Place.
Me and said, we can't afford an apartment. We're renting a room. That would be an interesting thing to follow up, just how many people are actually making that decision that you can't actually afford an entire apartment for yourself or you know, as a couple, and you're renting a room.
And, you know, nobody wants a crash. Nobody wants to see people lose value in their homes. But the other side of it is for those who don't own homes and for young people, you know, $800,000 to buy a rundown bungalow an hour from the city center in Ottawa does not feel sustainable to me. Like in 5 years, is that going to be sustainable? Like it doesn't seem to make sense to me. And the real estate agents all say, well, supply and demand, we don't have enough supply, you know. Prices are catching up to what, those are all fair points. But the question I think that, like, real estate used to be cyclical. It would go up and it would go down. And I've said this before. In my 25 years of owning homes in several different cities, four cities, I've never lost value in my home, even though I've moved a lot. That's unusual. Talk to your parents. I've talked to my parents. Like it goes up and it goes down. And in Ontario in particular, in the last 10 years, it's all been up, 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 up.
And the bulk of that time you've been paying very low interest rates while you've been mortgaging your home.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's it. And so we are the chickens coming home to roost. Mm. And this rental issue, and it's all related. People say, wait a second, you're talking about a closed food hamper, fridge at Parkdale. It's all related because it's a basic need. When rents get this high and food costs go this high and real estate is this high, it ripples through the economy and affects all sorts of people, not just people trying to buy a home, but people who are spending way more on rent than they should and they don't have enough money for food at the end of the month.
Yeah, you got to pay the rent bill. You can't always pay the grocery bill. Sometimes you have to look at other options. So again, what we're talking about is this announcement this morning that the Parkdale Food Center is closing their community fridge. We don't know a whole lot more than that. Some incidents there. We will be looking into that throughout the day, and we'll get you more information on that as soon as we have it. And Natalie Van Roy, as Graham mentioned, covering that for CTV Ottawa, so we'll know more a little bit later. If you're out there listening to us in the car, driving around, the other thing you might be thinking of this morning is how to avoid the potholes in front of you. There are a lot of them. They are big, and they can cause some damage. The city is getting to work on that. We're going to touch base on pothole season. And if you are one of those people who's been affected by a pothole, if you've experienced some damage, you might be able to get some money back. We'll get into that as well. That's all coming up here on Ottawa at Work. It's 11:18. And if you can't
be next to me. Listen anytime, anywhere, through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull continues.
on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
11:38 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. I've been running through this weather forecast. I think for a lot of people, today came as a bit of a surprise because the temperature looks pretty good. And we were saying at one point earlier in the week it was going to get up to 5 degrees today. And then we started pulling back a little bit. So 3 degrees is the forecast high in the sunshine, which sounds really nice. It looks beautiful out the window here. But that wind was a little bit higher than expected. Katie Griffin is here. And Graham, when he was here earlier, Katie walked out saying, oh, my goodness. He went out skiing this morning, and I think he didn't realize as well what kind of wind chill you were dealing with. And I don't know if it's just tougher this time of year when you're expecting to feel the warmth in the sun out there and spring is approaching, but a minus 15, minus 16, minus 17 degree wind chill, I don't feel like I can deal with it in March.
It's a lot, and we have been spoiled over the last couple of days and weeks for sure. Yeah, a little colder than what I thought today too, because even just running in and out from the car, maybe not bundling up, but definitely had to today if you're doing anything outside. And John Croupier, our assignment editor, just walked in and he said, that's cold. Yeah. I don't know what people are saying. And it's like, yeah, I think we're just happy to be, we're closer to spring than we are to winter. Of course, with spring coming, I guess, next week.
Yes.
So we're like, okay, we're kind of done with these temperatures.
Those days early next week look really good. And I guess spring officially hits on Tuesday next week. And it does look like it is much, much, much better. But right now, minus 3, and at noon, still a wind chill of minus 10 out there with the winds gusting to 50 kilometers through the early afternoon hours. It's all going to die down by about 4 o'clock, down to more normal territory, which is winds out of the northwest at 20 kilometers an hour and very little wind chill at that point. So it improves. And if you just love the sunshine, then you'll enjoy that today. We do have snow on the way the next few days, so it'll be a little bit grayer. But yeah, I don't feel like I did a very good job of letting people know on the news last night that the wind was going to be that high because I wore the wrong clothing today. Because you're kind of out of the habit of having, you know, neck warmer and
bundled up,
all of that ready to go for sure. Yeah. So Katie Griffin is in for Matt Scooby, who's enjoying probably the snowier but slightly warmer weather in Toronto, where he's filling in on your morning. And you are anchoring CTV Ottawa News at noon. That Parkdale yes. community fridge, we just talked to Graham about that as well. That was a bit of a shock in terms of announcement today that they were closing that down because they've had some difficult incidents surrounding it.
Yeah, it's really too bad at a time when obviously it is so greatly needed, and that's why the fridge was put there, because there was a massive need in the community. And now this other blow that now they're unfortunately having to close it because of a lot of homophobic, racist incidents. And now they're kind of trying to have to regroup to figure out, okay, the need is still there. So how are we going to help these people who need the help in general, but also during these really tough times when grocery prices are still going up?
So Natalie Van Roy will be looking into that, getting details. I have people texting about potholes,
yes,
saying they want more follow-up on the story yesterday that we did on CTV Ottawa about, you know, the fact that you can go to the city and put in a claim if you see damage, but you're not that likely to be reimbursed. About 10% of the time, people are actually getting some money back on their claims. We will follow up on that today.
Yes.
As well. Have you seen a lot of potholes out there as you've been driving in?
I have. And we were having this debate. Is it, we kind of have the same debate every year. Is it worse this year than other years? It's still pretty bad out there, coming a bit earlier because mm-hmm. we have had so many freeze thaw cycles and the weather has just been a bit wonky. And you kind of, every time you're driving, you try to do your best to keep an eye out on them and for them. But sometimes when you hit one, you just, like, your whole body tenses up, just going, oh, hope I didn't do too much damage.
Yeah, exactly. That's the rotten part of spring, the inevitable part of spring in this area. The excellent part for me is patio season starting. But I know you will be talking as well at noon about the fact that these fees are in place, back in place at 50%, but some restaurant owners upset about that. The tax on alcohol that goes through on April 1st as well. But prior to that, on Friday, we have a St. Patrick's Day where you probably will not want to be sitting out on the patio because it's going to be snowy, but you may want to take a moment to go indoors and have a drink and celebrate. And Leanne on the noon show today will be talking not about the drinking aspect of St. Paddy's Day necessarily, but a little Irish dancing today.
Yes, I'm sure there'll be some comments about the drinking aspects of St. Patrick's Day. So yes, we'll get you set a couple of days early with a wonderful group, and we'll see some Irish dancing. And it really just will get you into the spirit. I know both of us have been to Ireland and absolutely loved it. So it'll be a little bit of a taste of Ireland in our CTV studio today.
You're thinking about getting back there, I think, sooner than I might have a chance to get back, because you really love Ireland.
I may have my tickets booked already. So that's looking forward to that. It's a great country.
I am jealous. Did you ever do any Irish dancing when you were young?
No.
It's very tough.
It is.
I've only tried it like superficially, but my sister was big into Highland dancing.
Okay.
Which has like kind of a similar energy to it. And it was very, very cool. I don't know why. I guess I just didn't seem talented. I got put into piano. Wasted a lot of time trying to read music and figure that out. Years and years in piano lessons only to be able to do a couple of songs.
Well, you know what? It's never too late to try something new. So
no.
I'm sure if you wanted to go and try your hand at Highland or Irish dancing, you would
I was going to say, I do plan to go back and do piano lessons at some point where I don't have to have my mom urging me to practice. I'd also like to learn another language, but Highland or Irish dancing, I don't think those are happening.
No. Well, you can try it for fun and see how it...
The energy levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to check it out, and I'm watching we have a secret TV that gives us a look at the CTV Ottawa studio right now. I can tell you that Leanne is dressed in green, ready to go. And you're going to get a little taste of that on the CTV Ottawa News at noon coming up. Katie, thank you very much.
Thank you, Patricia.
11:44 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We will be back to wrap the show in just a moment.